Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire.
Welcome to episode 7 of the Forgot My Dice podcast. As always, this is Jonathan Edwards, your host. With me, my intrepid co-host, Mr. Robert Lundgren. Robert, how you doing?
You didn't let me say hello, hello. Now I'm doing bad.
But this is your chance.
Well, you said, how am I doing? That's not the proper response.
You could have started with hello, hello, I'm doing
hello,
great.
Hello, hello, I'm doing fine. That's
not
my shtick.
Do you need a take two?
No, we don't need a take two. You wrecked my intro. What am I going to do? I'll be in my trailer!
As always, I shall persevere despite my co-host's diva ways.
If you bring me a wine glass full of blue M&Ms, I'll come back on the air.
I think I can make that happen for you. I've got an assistant.
You got an assistant? You got a PA? You got
right.
An intern?
That's right.
A.k.a. an unpaid college slave?
No, the intern actually pays me for the privilege of serving the show.
There you go.
Well,
if you would like
show,
to be an intern for Forgot My Dice, please send your resume to fmdpodcast2016 at gmail.com. We'll be happy to not pay you.
And we could use the help.
Yeah, true.
Well, speaking of the show, we have some huge, some gigantic, some ginormous, and any other descriptor you want to throw in there, news.
Yes, we do. We finally published your review.
That too. But before we get to that good news, let's talk about the future of the show. And this is gigantic.
I want you to sit down. I want you to close your eyes. I want you to envision the future in front of you as a road, like in Terminator.
If you're driving when you're listening to us, I want you to pull over first.
And then imagine that same road that you're on in the dark, like Terminator 2, with the lines and the Linda Hamilton voiceover.
No
okay,
fate,
go.
But what you make.
That's right. All right.
So
now that we've set the stage, this is not going to be as good as we're making it out to be. There's no way we could live up to this hype.
Well, we are very, very proud to announce that we have joined the Freebooters Network. And this is a wonderful podcast network that just recently got off the ground. And we will be joining the likes of the D6 Generation Lost Chapters. We're going to be joining the likes of 40K Radio, which is going to be all your Warhammer 40K and 30K coverage. It Will Not Die, Miniature Gaming, Anonymous Tabletop, which is general tabletop banter. And finally, one of my favorites, the Mantic Radio Official Podcast. And Mantic, of course, manufacturers of Kings of War, Dreadball. One of my new favorites, The Walking Dead All Out War.
Yeah, I was kind of a creeper at the game store the other day because it apparently was Kings of War Day at the game store. So I was watching some games and I'm like, wow, those are some pretty minis.
Yeah.
They're all in formation and they're marching in columns.
It
and
does
it's like,
look
ooh,
pretty. It does
armies.
Look pretty. To join the network, you can go to freebootersnetwork.com. That's the website. And in fact, we are actually going to be shutting down our current feed of episodes. And the Freebooters Network will be the only place where you'll be able to get our episodes. So I want you to make a note in your phone. I want you to write something down. I want you to go right now, if you can, and go to freebootersnetwork.com and make sure that you subscribe there. Because starting in 2 to 3 weeks when our next episode comes out...
Two to three. We'll get to that in a sec. But anyway, starting when we fire up again.
Yes.
We are planning on releasing like a little reminder. So if you forget and you're like, ooh, episode 8 just downloaded onto my iPod. Why is it so small? It'll probably be a minute of us saying like, yeah, we talked about all this cool stuff. But go over there because we're not going to talk about it here.
So
along with that is going to come with a couple of changes. We're going to have some ads and a couple of fun bumpers and cool stuff. It's going to be like legitimate radio. We're going legit. This isn't going to be this mafia operation anymore, man. We're going legit.
I don't think they must have listened to our entire episode since they're making us legit. I feel like they heard the good 5 minutes.
Well, they heard Urban Nights. That's what sold the show, man.
I know. We sent them the right one. Thank you, Michael.
They're like half dead from twins, just like, yeah, it's a good game. I kind of like it, I think, sort of. What game are we talking about?
So yes, we will put out a reminder. We will, of course, blast our social media with reminders as well. But starting with episode 8, we will be on the Freebooters Network, freebootersnetwork.com. We're super excited, super stoked. We're joining some genuine podcast royalty. I can't believe, I don't know about you, Robert, but I'm absolutely flattered that we get to join this.
Yeah, I can't think of anything to say. I'm trying to express what I want to say, and I can't quite wrap my head around it right now. Well, I'll drink coffee to that.
We'll come back to that thought. We'll come back to that thought.
Should I be prepping my final thoughts of the episode when any last thing, Robert? It's like, yes, that thing we talked about an hour ago.
If you start working on your last thoughts now, it should be primed and ready to go by the time we get there.
That'll be better than normal when I
get caught by surprise
from Fifth Element. No. Yeah.
Well, speaking of the show in general, of course, ForgotMyDice.com continues to be a great place for all kinds of content. And I actually got a chance to write my very first article for the site. We have now published a review of the Star Wars RPG system. That, of course, is Fantasy Flight's RPG system. And we covered all three core rule books in the review.
You say we like I had anything to do with it, although my wife helped you out.
Yes, no, she did a great job of editing, made the article even better.
Yes, Gina, my wife, the hidden talent behind all of this, because we don't know what the hell we're doing. But yeah, as of this airing, 17 people have read your review. So read your thoughts on Star Wars, Fantasy Flight, and proprietary dice.
Without any further ado, let's get on to the rest of our wonderful show, and we've got some
No.
You skipped over the middle.
Okay, so we're going to have a slight delay in episode 8 because, well, not only are we switching networks, you are doing something pretty rad next week, which is going to cause a bit of a delay in our recording.
Just a one-week delay. That's it. Just one week.
I'm going to say two. I'm going to set the expectation low, and if we do better, then bravo. So two week delay. We'll see if it's a week. We'll shoot for a week. If we fail, then
And it is my fault. I am actually taking a week off from life, and my lovely new wife and I are going to jump on a boat, and we are going to go to Cozumel and Montego Bay and Grand Cayman, and we are going to spend a week away from children and a week away from work and just a week away from civilization in general. It's going to be awesome.
How dare you take a steamer on our listeners and go on a cruise with your new wife on your honeymoon? And I'm using all the air quotes I can. How dare you, sir? How dare you have a life?
I gotta say, this is the most excited I've been in a long time.
And I have a buddy that's been trying to get me to go on a cruise forever, and I'm very jelly that you're maybe I'll have to tie my kids to a cinder block and drop them off in front of your house in a couple months and just you'll
see, like, watch the babies for you. We love watching the babies.
Do you like watching the babies for a week?
It's not like I don't have one or four of my own.
Well, there you go.
I'm old hat at this nonsense.
Do you want to have seven?
See, you're laughing, but we might end up there. Let me just tell you about her latest plans, but that's neither here nor there.
Okay.
So, it's kind of cool. I actually have the green light to take some board games on the cruise with us.
Are you going to be that weirdo? You're going to be like tooling around the observation deck, going like, hey, do you want to play some Settlers of Catan? We could trade some wood for sheep.
No, I've actually decided to just take a couple smaller items that we can play back in the cabin.
Some things that work good with two players, along with more.
Very, very small games like Scythe and Firefly, the board game with all the expansions.
It makes like a board that's larger than most doors.
Okay, so Firefly, the board game with all the expansions, that's about a 5.5 foot long board.
Nice.
No, I'm just going to take some small things. I actually think I'm going to take one of my new acquisitions. I got the Arkham Horror new LCG coming from Fantasy Flight, and it looks awesome. It's kind of based on the Lord of the Rings LCG in terms of gameplay, but it brings a lot more narrative into it, which is kind of neat.
Have we shifted gears off the shelf? Is this off the shelf talk? Should we?
No, this is pre-off the shelf. This is off the shelf warm-up, because I haven't actually played it yet. I've only been looking through the cards and the rules.
Oh, okay. Is this the part where I mentioned I pre-ordered Mass Effect Andromeda? Because I haven't actually played it. I have the right to play it when it comes out.
I, too, will be joining you on that one.
Anyway, okay, sorry.
That's as good a place as any to transition, so we might as well transition, and let's go ahead and start.
Were you not done? Lord of the Rings board game? Was there anything else to that? I interrupted you.
No. I'm going to take some small stuff is the point I'm trying to make.
You're going to take 7-1's duel?
So that I can continue to get my teeth beat in. Yes, nice. If you hear a whistle coming from the ocean, that's me without my front teeth after my wife kicks my rear end in again.
We're pretty far inland. That would have to be some serious screaming you're doing after you get your teeth kicked in.
She's sometimes very mean.
Jessica, no. By the way, I confirmed yesterday that Jessica does not
listen to the podcast.
Gina does, though. So Gina is the most awesome wife in the whole of the universe, and I'm lucky to have her. I love you, baby.
All right. Well, let's get on with the show and get started with our normal segments. And our first segment, of course, as always, is Off the Shelf. This is the segment where we get to talk about what we've actually had an opportunity to play. And Robert, you and I have actually had a remarkable couple of weeks here.
Yeah, I actually got to play games, like real games. It wasn't me going like, yeah, I played that Ticket to Ride on the app.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that we got a chance to play together.
I strapped Miles to my chest, and he clutched onto me tight and fell asleep and kind of distracted me. So I did not have a good showing at any of the games that we played, but whatever. I got out of the house, so I'll take it.
It was social time. That's important.
The first thing that happened was I arrived late because... Because, yeah, having babies kind of sucks, and they throw off your plans. So I got to catch the tail end of you guys playing Mechs versus Minions.
Oh, man, I don't even know where to begin with that game. That game is so good.
This game is made by Riot Games, yes?
Yes. They, of course, have never made a board game before.
You've heard of them because they make League of Legends.
Yes, and this board game is based in that world.
Yeah, so that's what shocked me. It's like Riot Games. Like, why have I heard of Riot Games? And I'm trying to figure out what board game they made. And they've made none. They make League of Legends. It's like, oh, that multi-billion-dollar franchise. That's what they make. Coolness. Okay.
$1.6 billion last year, by the way.
Some pocket change.
Well, they took some of this pocket change and they decided to make an amazing board game. You know, when you take off that lid and you see the first tray, and the first tray really is just that. It's the first of about 5 or 6 trays that come out of this box. And
it's like it's like archaeology, man. There's like more underneath.
It's like the inception of board games. You take one tray out and there's just another tray, and you realize you've got to go deeper. There's more trays beneath it.
And then you tear out the bottom of the box and go into limbo.
The first thing that you're going to notice when you start taking all these trays out is the minis. And the minis are striking. Highly detailed, absolutely beautiful. And here's the most important thing. All four of the heroes are pre-painted.
And the stupid little minions, they are not painted, but they have a wash over them just to kind of bring out some of their details, which is rad.
Well, and you know what? Honestly, as they're just like little minion goblins, it's kind of okay that they're not painted.
The game looks great. You guys were playing through
the tutorial mission. Yeah.
Tutorial mission. There we go. You guys were just roaming around and blowing stuff up. And it's a program movement game.
Yes, indeed. Which, you know, normally I don't necessarily really get into program movement games all that much, but I have to tell you, this one is just really, really well done. Every round, a bunch of cards come off the deck, and these cards all have a movement on them. And starting with the first player and rotating around, everybody gets to draft a single move. And then they take that move and put it into this 6-slot programming card that sits in front of you. And basically what that represents is the order in which these moves will be made. And so it's important where you put that card, because you don't want to put things in an order that doesn't let you accomplish things. So after a couple of rounds, you start to get this long, complicated program. And you can actually upgrade these programs by taking cards of the same suit and stacking them on top of one another, giving you access to stronger secondary and tertiary maneuvers. And as you start to build up these movements, you use them to basically attack these little minions that are running around the board with your mechs. And you do it with all kinds of different special moves, and the moves are sometimes have different attack patterns that are listed out on the cards, and you have to work together with everybody. And it's a little bit chaotic, too, because if you run into one another, you can start pushing each other around, which kind of reminded me of the chaos that you and I made in Dragon and Flagon a couple weeks ago. Yeah, it's just, I was having an absolute blast, and because it's co-op, all you get is this fantastic table talk going back and forth, and everybody really gets engaged in it, and I was just so impressed. I mean, I can't believe that this was their first foray into board gaming, because this is so highly and exquisitely acted upon. I mean, it's just so well put together.
So anyway, I saw the tail end of that, and I was mostly half paying attention to that while I was trying to get Miles to fall asleep on my chest, and then he did, and then we played... what was that first game we played? We played Mission Red Planet.
I absolutely adore Mission Red Planet. This is one of my favorite games that came out last year. This is actually a second edition of the game. It's from Fantasy Flight. And what did you think? What did you think?
I really liked it. I mean, I like the steampunk vibe. I liked, we posted a picture of it on the Twitters, but you have an X-Wing space mat. So we played on that because then, you know, Mars was in space.
It has a star field. I mean, the board. Okay, so we haven't talked about this game on the show yet. So let me give you a quick descriptor. In Mission Red Planet, everybody plays basically what amounts to a corporation, and you're trying to race these other corporations to Mars so that you can set up mining rights on three key minerals that are occurring on Mars. So you do this by loading up spaceships using a deck of 9 different types of cards, and every round, everybody chooses one of these cards from their hand, puts it down, and they each have a different effect. Now, each of these cards is listed with a value of 1 through 9. 9 being a relatively low number, which means it comes early on a countdown, and then 1 being the lowest number, which means that you have to wait the longest to play it. Now, the reason this is important is because the cards that are the most powerful have very, very low numbers, meaning they come up much later in a countdown, because every round you start at 9, and then you start counting down 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and as you get to each person's card, they get activated and played. The longer you have to wait, the more likely it is that the board state isn't going to be what you thought it was going to be, and it might end up screwing you in terms of what you have planned.
With a baby on my chest, I, without fail, did that no less than 4 times. I picked the exact wrong card for where the board state was. It was uncanny.
Well, I for a first-time player, you did fine. You did fine. Once these rockets get launched off, they get loaded up with these tiny, cute little astronaut miniatures. And these astronaut miniatures get placed on the game board, which is in the shape of Mars. So it's a circular planet, and it's divided up into a bunch of different map areas. And each of those areas has a different mineral that's been assigned to it that gets mined. And you're basically vying for control over mining rights of all these different areas. And that translates to victory points at the end of the game. And there's a couple other little things that come into play during the modified gameplay. But that's kind of the basics of it. One of the things that I really like about the Fantasy Flight version is, like you said, the steampunk vibe and the level of production quality. It's just a beautiful game.
It's a really cute game. I lost by a mile because it took me a little while to figure out what was going on. And then I was going for a victory condition where I would have not lost by at least a mile. I would have lost by 3 points, I think, because I would have made 16. And I think the lowest was like 19, I want to say. But then somebody killed one of my guys because I was going for an area control mission objective. And I had several missions that overlapped in one zone. And that's the guy he killed. And
yeah,
I foolishly
took out your keystone.
Yeah, and it just unraveled everything. And I wasn't paying attention enough to think maybe I should have some guys doubled up in all the key areas. That probably would have been smart. It's a really good game. I don't have anything bad to say about it.
Now, after Mission Red Planet, we had a chance to play 2 smaller games as well. Let's talk about Dastardly Dirigibles. And this is a game from Fireside Games. And the reason I bring that up is because they're a local Austin game company, just like we're a local Austin game podcast.
And we've talked about this on the podcast, I think 2 episodes running now. So
yeah. So basically,
I don't know what new we can add to that, but I played it this time, so there you go.
What did you think?
It's not a very deep game.
No, but I don't feel like it needs to be.
It's like the saltine crackers of the gaming night. You know, it's the palate cleanser, so you can, you know, wash your brain out and try something new. We followed up Dastardly Dirigibles with a game I introduced you to, which is such a rare thing for me to say, so I'm going to bask for a minute. And I'm good. Fluffy Bunny Tea Party.
Fluffy Bunny Tea Party. Man, where did this game come from? It's just ridiculous, and yet it works on every level.
It's from a local Austin game designer named Mark, and he's a cool guy. I actually, back when I owned a shop, I would actually order these directly from him. I didn't get them through a distributor. I would just say, hey, Mark, give me more games, and he'd drive up and give them to me. So, and I'd hand him a check. You could think of it as Downton Abbey, the game. More importantly, the Countess Dowager, the game, because the main rule of Fluffy Bunny Tea Party is you have to be polite. And you can be snarky, but you have to be polite because it's polite society. So the basic setup is everybody takes a bunny character. So the turn order, if I remember correctly, is you draw a card or take a sip of tea, and then you can play a card or pass. And that's about it. You have 4 sips of tea. Whoever runs out of tea first, the game's over. The cards typically do stuff with the dessert deck where you're trying to serve desserts to other players. And the winner of the game is whoever has the fewest number of dessert points on their plate at the end of the game. And if there's a tie, it is whoever has the fewest amount of cards. Say I've won before where me and somebody else had 6 points, but I had 2 things that were 3 points and they had a multitude of things that were worth 1 point, and I thus had fewer cards and I won.
I really like the poking at each other aspect of this game, because every single move basically has you very politely offering your points to somebody else on the table. And it just, it gets to be very snarky, and you have to remember your manners, which makes it hard. And I had such a blast playing this game. It was hysterical.
It is so much fun. And then when you were rude, if you're rude, basically you have to tap your character card. And then the only thing you can do when it comes around to you again is untap your card. So you lose a turn, basically. But until you untap your card, you can't like double tap your card. It's already tapped. So it lets somebody just be like finger, like the middle fingers flying, curse words coming out of your mouth, woven like a tapestry that still hangs over the Eastern Seaboard. And you were fully relishing that for like the minute you had before the turn came around back to you and you got to turn your card face up. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, that game is just too much fun. I really enjoyed it. If you can get your hands on a copy, it's a good time.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes. I think he still has copies off his website, so I'll find it again. It's by Gizmic Games, I want to say. Let me look that up. Fluffy Bunny Tea Party is out at Gizmic Game Works, which is sad. So you have to buy it off of drive-through cards now. So I will definitely have that.
You and I actually had a chance to introduce your wife to a game that we've been talking about introducing her to for quite some time, and that was Camel Up.
Yeah, I've been talking about this game with her for months, ever since I played it Extra Life 2015, so over a year ago at this point. And I've been trying to get my hands on a copy, and I haven't been able to find one because, you know, it's got
it's
custom.
It's been tough to find, but that's because it's such a great game.
Yeah, it's an amazing game. So my wife had a great time, and she did pretty good.
No, she did great. She did great for her first time playing. And I got to tell you, the more I play that game, the more I enjoy it. That game is just always fun. I've never had a bad time with that game.
Because you've mentioned that you played with your kids before. And I can totally see how, because it's not hard.
No, it's not hard. There's not a lot of reading involved. In fact, you know, once you've learned the betting tiles and whatnot, there's no reading involved. So you can actually get kids started pretty young with it. I think I was playing this game with my daughter when she was 6. She's 7 now, so she totally gets it. She's actually a shark at it, which is scary. And then there's my oldest son, who is, you know, just the most reckless bettor you'll ever meet.
And you know what? Either strategy can work.
No, they both won in the past. They have both won. So yes, each of those strategies does in fact work quite nicely.
Go get a copy. Enough said.
So that was the last one that we played together, but I actually had a chance to play a couple other games with some friends. I had a chance to grab Star Realms Colony Wars, which is the second edition of Star Realms to come out. It's a standalone game that plays just like Star Realms, but you can actually take the Colony Wars deck and combine it with Star Realms to make, like, I guess you could call it Ultimate Star Realms. In playing Colony Wars, I got to tell you, it feels a little more balanced out than the Star Realms deck is. And I actually did have one other game night that I managed to participate in, and we got a bunch of games in that night as well. We had a chance to play Pandemic Reign of Cthulhu, which is the new Pandemic game. Uses the Pandemic engine, but it takes it in a very different direction. And it's, instead of trying to fight diseases, you are, of course, trying to fight cultists who are trying to bring forth all the demons from the old ones. And I don't know, it was a lot of fun.
I'm very curious about that game. I love the Pandemic.
Then I think
that
you'll
is
like
one
this
of the best,
because I played it with a bunch of Pandemic vets and we all had a great time.
I want to ask detailed questions, but I don't know if that makes good podcasting.
Let's see if we can get you in on the next game of it. I do think that you're gonna like it a lot.
I think I'd rather just play it than, you know, ask questions about it and imagine it in my head. And since playing games with Miles worked out, oh my god, I think I'll just play it. That
there
sounds better. And we'll talk about it later.
And I had a chance to play Burger Up, which I've talked about on the podcast before. Continues to be a great, fun game from Rule and Make.
I totally want to try Burger Up.
I think you're really going to like it. I mean, it's a good, easy filler game with a fair amount of depth to it. And then we also had a chance to play Piña Pirata, which is a fun little game. At its core, it's essentially Uno meets Flux. The core mechanic has you matching suits from your hand, and these suits are different pirates. But then there's these tiles that come out, and each of the tiles has a rules modification on it. You start out with 3 rules modifications, and as you play the game, you start to add more and more and more rules modifications until you have 6 active at a time. And then at the end of every round, you're actually introducing a new one and kicking an old one out, so the rules start to morph through the game. Well, depending on the group that you play with, it gets decidedly more aggressive at the other players until it's downright devolves into just craziness. And my gaming group had a great time with this game. Piña Pirata. It's a really fun little game. We played it in between larger games, and it ended up being a great, great filler game. We had a blast with it. And then aside from my normal bi-weekly Pathfinder game, which I had a chance to get a session of, and nothing else to report there, just Pathfinder continues to be Pathfinder, I did get a chance to go to a preview event of Star Wars Destiny, which is their new card and dice game from Fantasy Flight.
How is that?
I really, really like it. It plays faster than Dice Masters. And okay. The rules are a little tighter. I mean, one of the problems with Dice Masters is the same problem with any of these games with lots and lots of expansion opportunity, and that you start to get power creep with certain factions. That certainly was the case with Dice Masters. With this one, my experience so far, and this is so far, right, with base stuff, because there's only the first level of expansions out, it's a much tighter game. And it plays really, really, really fast. And the dice are absolutely pretty, just gorgeous. I showed you a bunch of them.
They have little art on them, and then they shellac the whole thing to protect the art. I liked it.
That's just initial impressions off of only a couple of games at a preview event. But, I mean, the components are pretty, the gameplay is super fast, and I like where it's going.
Well, I got one last game in. I went over to a buddy's house, and he has a 3-year-old, and I have a 5-year-old, and thus they played together and nullified one another. Which was awesome. And I strapped Miles to my chest, and my wife was taking care of Barry, and I got to play some War Machine. Woo!
Very nice.
I played Convergence of Cirrus, which is my second main faction. I'm a troll player and a Cirrus player mainly. I dabble in a couple other factions, but I've been itching to play some actual War Machine side because they got the cool updates. So unlike all the other factions in third edition War Machine, Cirrus does not have the power-up rule, which was making my opponents like, they always thought I was missing a step. I got corrected on that like 5 times, and it was like, well, maybe not 5 times. I got corrected on it maybe twice. But anyway, regardless, it was like, no, I don't play with that rule. What they have instead is back in Mark II, once per turn, all of the warjacks could, when they spent a focus, they can move that focus to another friendly jack within 6 inches. In third edition, it is now all the time they can move that around.
Nice.
And it was awesome. It was so much fun. It played so much better. I did not miss power up after that. I had a warjack heavy with a colossal Iron Mother list, and I was playing versus Old Witch, and playing with a baby strapped to your chest, like, dragged that game out in a supreme fashion. So it took 5 hours to play what probably should have been a 90-minute game tops, and I was getting kind of tired of doing that, so I probably went in for an assassination that, looking back on it, I shouldn't have done, because it came down to a 50-50 die roll, which is, if I hit her, I would have murderated the crud out of her. And if I missed, it would have been game over, and I missed, and it was game over, and I lost. It would have been glorious if I hit her. What I should have done was killed the only warjack that could have killed my colossal, and then I would have ran the table, but I went for the thing that would have ended the game quickly, so I wouldn't have to keep fighting my baby and dragging this game out even longer than it needed to be. It was a lot of fun. I haven't played War Machine in a while, and I got to play actual War Machine, not Hordes, so that was a lot of fun. And that new rule for Cirrus is amazing. It was so much better. So much better.
What about other items? Did you get any media in? Did you get any book reading in?
I found Ratchet & Clank, the reboot, the 2015 based off the movie. Yeah. I found that cheap at Target, so I bought it, and I've been playing that, and it's fun. It is definitely a reboot, so like the game's like coming back to me as I play it. Like, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, you go over here, and you do this thing. And I know there's a couple new levels in it, so those are going to really throw me off when they happen. But yeah, no, I mean, it's what I remember, but it's much prettier, which is fun. And I've been watching Star Trek Enterprise.
I have fond memories of that show.
I didn't. I actually really disliked that show, and I'm watching it again, and I'm appreciating it more. And maybe it's because I haven't watched Star Trek in a couple of years now, so like I don't have an idea of what Star Trek should be in my head. I don't know, but I'm enjoying it on this run through.
Let me tell you, currently rewatching The Next Generation, I think our brain has a tendency to kind of fill in the gaps of kind of what a hot mess those first two seasons were.
I kind of ignore those first two seasons.
But you can't. That's, you know, that's like 25% of the run.
Yeah, about half of season two is okay, and then it gets better.
I haven't gotten to that point yet. I'm still in the rough first half of season two. But that said, I mean, the point I'm trying to make here is when you go back and when you watch the old Star Treks, you kind of realize that your brain is kind of forgiving it for a lot of its trespasses, and you're not remembering them. Now that you're going back to see Enterprise, you're seeing a much more evolved show that benefits from all the learning they did on Next Generation, DS9, and Voyager. I always thought it was a fun show. It doesn't do a good job of sticking to canon, but that being said, I think it's a fun show.
Yeah, I agree.
For me, not a whole lot. I continue to play Battlefield 1, and that's pretty much all I've had time for. I haven't had time to barely read a thing, and I'm definitely looking forward to the honeymoon just to get some reading in.
Are you still wrecking face with tanks?
I am. I went 48-1 in a tank the other day.
Oh my god.
I mean, it was one of those I can do no wrong. Like, I could not miss shots. I was shooting down planes. I was shooting other tanks. If anybody dared move, I would shoot them. I sniped a guy from easily a third or half mile by arcing the shot over a hill. Mind you, now that I've had that one round, it'll probably be, you know, years until I have another good one. But it was an amazing moment, that's for sure.
Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice when you have that evening where everything just clicks?
Yeah, they're rare, but when they happen, man, it just makes you feel like a million bucks. Well, that is what we've had off the shelf.
Do you have a tabletop, board game, miniature game, or RPG that you're going to release for retail?
Or do you have an upcoming tabletop Kickstarter that you're about to launch?
We would love to interview you for a future episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast.
Send us an email to fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com to schedule an interview. All right, so let's turn our attention to Wisdom of Crowds, our tabletop news and crowdfunding segment. We're going to start with an oldie but goodie on this one, and that is Blood Bowl is back.
Sports games appear to be the new hotness right now.
No kidding. There's a ton of them. Yeah, so we're getting a new grind from War Machines. We've got Dread Ball. We've got Guild Ball.
And now we got Blood Bowl back, the mother of all the games.
Yeah. So far in the box, you're going to get humans and you're going to get orcs, and you're actually going to get a double-sided pitch. It's got a human pitch on one side and an orc pitch on the other, which is kind of neat.
From what they've announced, Skaven are out because they're on their website at the very least, and the dwarves are coming soon. They're calling this release Season 1, so I don't know if they're going to use incremental rules updates like Steamforge game does, or if they're just going to use the seasons as excuses to release teams, I should say. Because there are actually a lot of teams in Blood Bowl. I was going over the Giants.
It's a huge, huge list of factions.
So we'll see how far they get along on this.
There's a lot of Blood Bowl fans out there.
I worked at a game store in college, and we had a Blood Bowl league. And it was at a period of time where Blood Bowl was not even in print. We'd have a good 8 games going, so 16 players every Sunday when football wasn't in season, because that's when they'd play it. They'd do their league when there wasn't actual football. They'd have pretend fantasy football. Back before fantasy football was a thing, this was like the OG fantasy football. I have a lot of fond memories, and they would always make me they would always make me work that day because I was the only one who didn't play Blood Bowl in the store, so I got to watch the register while all the other employees got to play in the league. So they were quite happy with me, actually, and I just watched a lot of games, but it was fun. By the time, I think, is it out yet? It was not out yet when I was researching this, but is it out yet now?
You know what? I'm not 100% sure. If it's not out yet, it's going to be out in the next week or two, because I was at a Games Workshop store all of a week ago, and they had nothing but signage up for it saying it was coming soon.
So, yeah, probably by the time people hear this, it'll actually be out.
Now, sticking with high fantasy, but let's go ahead and turn our gaze back to a favorite of yours and mine, and that's Dungeons & Dragons. And this time, we've got some interesting news in that Dungeons & Dragons has finally done, you know, what nobody thought it could do back in the 80s.
Yes, it has entered the National Toy Hall of Fame. What I love about Dungeons & Dragons getting into this is what it got in with. The toys.
See, that's the greatest thing about the National Toy Hall of Fame, because there's always a board game every year. But it makes it in with some crazy, crazy stuff. Like, I remember last year there was a board game that got in. For the life of me, I can't remember which, but it got in with Twister. And so today, we're proud to announce that Dungeons & Dragons makes it in with Little People and The Swing.
The Swing. That newfangled toy, The Swing. Perhaps you've seen one at your local amusement park. Surely they're not on playgrounds everywhere. I mean, to get into the Toy Hall of Fame, they must be really killer and new, right?
I think it just goes to show you how Dungeons & Dragons acceptance has come a long way from the 80s when it was reviled as a potential entry into satanic worship.
Yeah. Go crazy. Run around your steam tunnels. go watch a awesome early movie by Tom Hanks. What was that one called? Mazes and Monsters. Good old Mazes and Monsters. Nerds have come a long way. Yay.
Well, in keeping with the classic D&D theme, let's go ahead and talk about something else that's available in classic Dungeons & Dragons, and that is a bunch of the old products are coming to print on demand.
Yeah, this one was weird because the full list is a little odd because it's a lot of odds and ends, and I'm wondering why they chose these. But then again, maybe it's converting PDF files into print-on-demand files is probably a lot harder than it sounds, because I know they had an open call not all that long ago for specific old D&D products, and what they wanted you to do was take really high-resolution scans of them and actually, like, cut the end off your book and, you know, remove it from the binding and scan the pages individually to get the best results.
I feel like they're not necessarily going to get a whole lot of people taking that up.
I don't know how that list is going, but yeah, so there's 15 products right now, if I remember correctly. Some of the highlights are the first edition Dragonlance Adventures, Darksun Worlds Beyond the Prism Pentad, which is a bizarre product. So, like, when Darksun released, they had a five-part novel series, and when that novel series concluded, there were a lot of changes to the world, obviously. This is like a little teeny tiny, like, 16-page book. It was thin as all heck, from what I remember, that just detailed the changes to the world after the book series. So, you know, it would say, like, this person's dead, or, you know, it was just tiny. It was so small. And I'm like, that's the one, that's the Darksun product you guys cover. You know,
but whatever. Some more recent stuff, too. They've got Draconomicon for 3E, Faces of Sigil for Planescape.
Faces of Sigil is a really good book. If you're into Planescape, it's a very good book. The Hollow World campaign setting, which somebody, there was a little bit of a question and answer on the Drive-Thru RPG page. Basically, the Hollow World was a box set back in the day. It actually had three books and maps, and that has all been condensed into one thick paperback, like a large, like 192-page paperback. But it's got all three of the books. They're just not separate. They are all together in one big Uber product. And then the last highlight was not Castle Ravenloft, because we've already gotten that in Curse of Strahd, but Ravenloft Part 2, The House on Griffin Hill, which, although it has Strahd on the cover, and Strahd kind of has a cameo in it, maybe, don't be fooled. The vampire in the cover is entirely false advertising. What The House on Griffin Hill is a ghost story. So, haha, fool, joke's on you. But yes, you could get that in print. How fun is that?
That is awesome. I mean, I love that they're releasing this stuff. And at the end of the day, you know, all these source books and whatnot, they still work. You can run them in 5th edition with just a few minor tweaks.
It's weird to think that technology has gotten to the point where, you know, old collectible books aren't going to be collectible anymore. You can just get them again in print.
For all the good and bad of technology, one of the best things about it is that you do have that digital footprint, and stuff never really goes out of print once it's up on the internet.
On the Wizards of the Coast front, back in August, so yeah, we're covering this just a little late, Wizards announced that the next magic block is going to be Amonkhet, which is obviously a Egypt-inspired magic setting. But the thing that made me put it on this list is I was poking around the internet the other day, and they have confirmed there's going to be an art book. Yay!
I got to tell you, this is the theme of all the themes that might finally push me to buy a magic deck. I love, love Egyptian mythology and just that any product that even mildly hints at it. And so this might be the one.
Well, I'm sure they'll have a dual deck or something along those lines you could get at the very least.
I mean, there's no way I'm going to go, you know, full froth for it. I'm not diving all the way in, but I really wouldn't mind, you know, at least picking up a deck at the very least for the art. But
or if you got the time, like playing a draft, those are real fun, and you can just get the Amonkhet cards.
So this but might be it. I might be buying in soon.
Nice, nice. So obviously I'm excited, because if there's an art book, I mean, they've already talked about Planeshift Kaladesh, like it might be a thing. So hopefully we'll get Planeshift Amonkhet. That would be awesome. Crossing my fingers, I will keep buying these art books as long as they keep releasing them, Wizards. So the fluff is obviously Egyptian feel. They have said that Nicol Bolas, the 25,000-year-old elder dragon planeswalker, is in charge of Amonkhet, which is interesting. He hasn't been around a lot in the more recent fluff, so I'm not as familiar with him, because I really started getting into the fluff when the plane shifts obviously came out.
Mm-hmm.
But I know he is like a big bad. Like he is a bad, bad, bad dragon. Going back to Zendikar, the reason Ugin, the spirit dragon, was not around to fight the Eldrazi was because Nicol Bolas gave him a mild case of death, which he recovered from.
A mild case.
Well, he got better, but he was dead briefly. Well, actually, not even briefly. He was dead for like 1,000 years, but he got put in a cocoon and now he's better. But yeah, no, Nicol Bolas is one of the big bads of magic. And so possibly getting a monster annual entry for him, because I would expect him to be on Tiamat level. I mean, he's 25,000 years old. He has, and he's like a master wizard of, if I remember correctly, blue, black, and red mana. So he is a nasty, nasty dragon. And his main, I was reading his Magic Wiki fluff entry on him. Apparently his big, like, weapon is if he just touches you, it just eats the time out of you or something. So that is his preferred method. Like, he was fighting some planeswalker for a while, and he got bored and just touched them and killed them because he was like, I'm done with this. This was fun, but now I'm not amused anymore. Sucked out your time. Part two of the Amonkhet block will be a set called The Hour of Devastation. So I'm assuming happy and fun things will happen in one.
You know, it's probably a little Armageddon amongst friends.
That's right. Devastation.
Well, speaking of Armageddon, the next little bit of news is kind of interesting. We are getting a Terminator board game. This is going to be separate from the Terminator Genesis miniatures game that was released a year or two ago. This is actually going to be a board game based around the original Terminator movie. Are my hopes high? Not particularly. So often a lot of the tie-ins get a little, you know, shall we say, watered down.
But and not less the more recent movies in the franchise.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't even get me started there. On the plus side, this has at least one phenomenal idea. The game actually is an asymmetrical strategy game, and it's played on two boards. And one board represents 1984, and the other board represents 2029. And that's such a cool idea.
Apparently, it's going to be multiplayer where one person's playing Skynet, and then multiple people are playing the other side.
I think that's cool. I think that might work.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. It's very thematic at the very least. I mean, we were talking last time about how we don't necessarily like board games like that, but this one fits the fluff, so I'm kind of like okay with it for a weird reason.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
This is actually going to be coming to us via Kickstarter in February of 2017, so we'll have a lot more information on it then, but it's cool that they announced it, and man, let me tell you, that gameplay of having the two boards is just a neat idea. I'm really excited about it. Hopefully it kind of lives up to that potential.
I wonder what the win condition will be, because if you're following the game, the win condition should be on the 84 board and not the 2029 board. The 2029 board should be just stalling Skynet from winning as long as possible, so the 1984 board can
maybe
do
that's its how time. you'll manage round tracking.
See, why are we not designing this game? We're giving out great ideas. This Kickstarter is not for
seriously,
you know, another couple
seriously.
Months.
Space Goat Productions, we're here. Give us a call.
Yeah, we're going to bill you if you steal our idea.
Or ask for a cut of the Kickstarter. Speaking of Kickstarters, let's go ahead and shift our gears now and take a look at the crowdfunding arena. And our first one is a little game called Legends Untold. And this is kind of neat. It's a 1-4 player cooperative game. It's a basically an adventure card game.
Which is your favorite genre?
I wouldn't say favorite, but it's one of my favorites. It's a neat genre. I'll say that.
We should just say, is it a board game? Then, yeah, you like it. You like that genre.
Now, one thing that they do say is that they say it's as deep as an RPG, but as fast as a card game. And I do have to say, from the adventure card games, that is one thing that is often missing, is just that little extra layer of fluff to tell a story. So I will be interested to see how they handle it. In fact, one of the games that we talked about earlier, I picked up a copy of the new Arkham Horror LCG, and one of the things that it does really well, especially when you compare it to other cooperative card games that have come before it, is that it really does a good job of setting up a story and giving you narrative.
If they can pull that off, that'd be pretty cool. Because I remember my buddy was playing the Pathfinder Rise of the Rune Lords, the original one.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to run Rise of the Rune Lords, the Pathfinder adventure path. And I got really bummed because I'm like, oh, he obviously knows all the plot and all that. And he was in the middle of it. And he looked at me and he's like, you know what? I can honestly tell you, I have no idea what goes on in that adventure path.
I love the Pathfinder adventure card game. It's a good game, but it does not do a very good job of giving you nearly enough fluff.
Maybe these guys can crack the code that'll do that.
So you get a copy of the game for about $24. It's listed in British pounds, but comes out to 24 American. And that gets you one copy of the game. It's 1-4 players. And you know what? For that price, you're really going to have a hard time going wrong.
Wow, it's $24 and they're already at US 62,000.
Yeah,
wow.
They've got almost 2,000 backers.
Wow, that is a lot of backers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that they're doing it right. Well, now let's turn our gaze into history, and we're going to talk a little bit about Portuguese history, specifically 1755. Do you remember what happened in 1755 Portugal?
No.
Oh, well, let me tell you. There was a gigantic estimated 8.5 to 9.0 earthquake that then brought a tsunami and 3 days of raging fires to the city of Lisboa. It was basically all but devastated at the time. And you're probably wondering to yourself, what does this have to do with board games? That's because there's a new board game available on Kickstarter. It's from Vidal Lacerda, and he, of course, is the father of Kanban Automotive Revolution, CO2. I mean, these are the heaviest of heavy Euro-style games. And he's bringing forth Lisboa. And it is a game all about the rebuilding effort after the huge earthquake of 1755.
It looks pretty sweet.
It does. It's kind of an interesting art style. The art style is very much what you'd expect to find in old historical paintings from that time period.
It's got that like faded vibe too, which is kind of weird. Like you're like playing history in a weird way, which is kind of cool. I like that idea. Like that art design is just a good idea.
No, it's
Hey, and the rules are on the Kickstarter. You just click on it and you get them.
Yeah, I appreciate any Kickstarter that's got solid rules that you can read. I think that's the best way to make a final decision on a game. The game itself looks kind of neat. I mean, it's pretty much, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get one heavy, heavy Euro. That's what all this guy's games are.
Oh, speaking of 24 pages of Euro rules.
Yeah. Let me tell you, Kanban Automotive Revolution, I played it once. I love the game. But my goodness, the amount of rules that you have to know. It took an hour and a half just to teach the game. And that was just for the basics. Like, we were constantly referring back to the book. That said, the game is brilliant. The game is nothing short of brilliant. Same with CO2. So I'm definitely excited for this. I just don't know that I have room in my collection for yet another supremely heavy game like this.
Speaking of supremely heavy, apparently the MSRP on this guy is going to be $99, but during
it's a
the
beast
Kickstarter
of a game though.
Yeah, $100 board game.
But look at everything that comes in the box. I mean, you get the board, of course. You get player boards for each individual player,
which are multi-level, so yes. They've got little inserts and whatnot, kind of like
similar to Scythe. And then you've got several decks of cards. You've got tiles representing the city. Actually, you've got like a bunch of different tiles. There's a ton of wood in the box, too. There's cubes to represent the tsunami, the fire, and the earthquake. There's meeples to represent workers. There's more markers to represent all the different cloth and books and tools and gold that you can collect to manufacture stuff.
There are actually two, from what I'm seeing, sets of meeples in here. The courtier meeples in the player colors, which you just get one of. Everybody gets eight. Just normal meeples on top of that, plus houses, plus rubble markers in your various colors.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of wood in the box. I mean, you start to realize why it's going to be $100. I mean, this is going to be a complex game with lots of tracking.
It looks like the Euroist of Euro games.
And finally, keeping in that theme of destruction and dystopian worlds, let's go ahead and turn our attention to our final Kickstarter of today, and that is from Spartan Games. Of course, Spartan Games is very... very well known for their Halo miniatures game, as well as the Firestorm and Firestorm Armada games, which are very popular as well. And that is Dystopian World.
It looks like what they are trying to do is they're trying to fund, what are they calling it? I think it's just the two-player starter at this point. Yeah, the Ice Maiden two-player starter set. And then it'll come with a Prussian Empire naval fleet and a Russian naval fleet. And also included are two resin fortress, iceberg fortress scenery pieces.
Can I just say how absolutely strikingly gorgeous these models are?
Dystopian Wars is a very pretty game. It's very pretty.
I'm looking at that resin sea fortress, and man, I mean, that's just beautiful. The detail on it.
The iceberg aircraft carrier?
Yes. Yes, yeah. Please.
They're always good at that.
Oh, it's tickling the want to purchase so badly. The problem is...
Have you ever looked at the Dystopian Wars model range?
Yes, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, everybody gets flying aircraft carriers because that...
It makes
that
me
is
happy.
The first thing. Yeah, especially the one that wouldn't work at all because it's like a landing strip on top of a blimp, which would just make the stupid thing flip over. But it's steampunk science, man. They got that worked out.
Hey man, the science is in our department. The Kickstarter itself is doing pretty well. They're getting pretty close to funding with 28 days left to go. They're sitting at 43,000 of 62,000 asked, so it seems like they're going to get there pretty easily. Looking at the backing levels are pretty straightforward. You can get a Dystopian Wars 2.5 core rulebook for only $22. You can get the hardback version of the rulebook for $31. For $49, you can get the rulebook plus the Nation Fleet expansion box. And then it just starts to go up from there. The two-player box set that we were just talking about, Operation Ice Maiden, that comes with two copies of the rulebook in softback and all the models that you'll see on the Kickstarter page, and that's only $80. I mean, in terms of what you get in the box, these are reasonably priced items.
Spartan, at this point, has a pretty solid rule set. They were a little dodgy back when they were in their first editions, but...
No, but they have not been shy at all about constantly working on those rules and updating them.
Dystopian Wars 2.0 is a couple of years old at this point, so... I mean, they've got a pretty solid grasp on the rules if they're just getting to 2.5 now. Because back when first edition came out, man, there was like a rules revision PDF like every other quarter, it seemed.
Well, there you go. Dystopian Wars expansion. Well, that brings us to the end of our crowdfunding and news segment. As always, if you have any news items or crowdfunding items that we should know about, definitely send us an email at fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com. We love getting feedback, so please let us know how we're doing by one of the following.
You can email us at fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com.
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/forgotmyndice. We post all our articles there, so feel free to comment. Or you can message us directly via Facebook Messenger.
We also have a Pinterest page where, among other things, we post articles along with other cool stuff we find. You can find us and message us there at pinterest.com/forgotmydice.
We also have Facebook comments enabled for all our articles at forgotmydice.com.
You can message us or tweet us on the Twitters. Find us at forgotmydice.
If you like the show, the best way for more people to find out about us is to give us a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher.
Lastly, for those of you listening to us from the Wizarding World, send your owls to Forgot My Dice.
The Wizarding World?
Yeah, they listen to podcasts on crystal balls.
Okay. And now it's time for our deep dive. And today we've got a game that we have played a couple times together now, Robert, and we've had a good time every time.
Yeah, and the last time we played, we roped Gina in, so we got to see the, not the two-player version, but the multiplayer version, which oddly
definitely didn't... changes it up quite a bit.
Kinda, yeah. Kinda not really. Like, anyway, sorry, we'll talk about that in a minute.
We are, of course, talking about Vikings on Board.
To read the game description. Vikings on Board is a big box family strategy game in which you will use your Viking tokens to claim actions on the board which best benefit your clan's voyage. The ships are comprised of several different segments which switch from ship to ship based off of actions you claim. Your goal is to have the most of your clan's pieces on a ship when it sets sail to claim the biggest portion of its points. Pay close attention. Your rivals will be eager to change the composition of your ships as well as the value of their merchandise.
And that is to say that it is, of course, a worker placement game. And we'll get a lot more into mechanics in just a moment. But Robert, before we get to that, let's go ahead and start off with some basics here. And just, you know, grabbing the game off the shelf, what were some of your impressions?
We've talked about this before when we in our off the shelves. But the game itself is very, very pretty. Very, very pretty. So the game retails for $40, $45, depending on where you're getting it right now. Honestly, to me, that seems kind of cheap because...
Yeah, it really does, doesn't it?
Yeah, because... I would have accepted that game if you had to, you know, punch everything out and assemble those Viking ships by yourself, which I would have cursed up a storm about because those are probably awful models to put together. But it's nice. They do it for you. Hooray.
The first thing to note is when you open up this box, you're expecting to find your punch board, right? You know, just like every other game that you open up, except this one, you open it up and you find this beautiful clear plastic tray and everything, all the little individual pieces of the ships that you end up moving around in the gameplay are all pre-built and sitting there and waiting for you. I mean, this is a game that you buy it, you unwrap the shrink, and you are ready to play. There is no assembly required and no punching required.
The top layer has all the four different colors of Vikings and the one Dockmaster guy or whatever he is, the gray Viking, you know. He doesn't get a flashy color. But, yeah, it just out of the box, it was not what I expected in that I didn't have to assemble anything, which was very, very nice.
Agreed. Yeah, you know what? It's interesting because I bought a copy of Colt Express last year, which has a very similar number of 3D scenery pieces that need to be, in the case of that game, put together. And that game, basically, I opened it up and it was almost 2 hours before I was done building everything and ready to play. And that's, you know, that's a pretty good investment in time. This game, you would have been able to get 4 or 5 rounds in by the time you were done.
Oh yeah, you would have been able to learn it and just have played several repeat games by the time you were done building that other one. So
yeah, and you know, it's important to note that the components here that we're talking about, they aren't sub quality components either. They are absolutely of the highest quality. Thick punch board. The silk screening on everything is absolutely beautiful. They even take the time to kind of sand down the paper tabs that were connecting it to board at some point, which is amazing. I mean, the level of detail in the presentation here is huge. What about graphic design, Robert? What did you think of the graphic design of the game?
I mean, the art was effective. It wasn't anything like... it's got like that Eurogame problem, which is, you know, the game, the game theme itself is interchangeable, in my opinion, for, you know, you could reskin it a dozen different ways and not change any of the core gameplay elements, and it would probably work just fine.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I didn't have any complaints about it. Everything was very colorful and very bright. And, you know, you had the little sea area and it's got tentacles in it. And it's like, oh, there's monsters out in the ocean. How fun.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have any complaints. Like, it didn't blow my mind at all with any of its components. But everything was on point. It was like, oh, this is a Viking game. There are Viking longships and little Viking dudes. And everything was very Viking-y.
Yeah.
There's little shields.
My only complaint about the graphic design comes down to the iconography for the actions. It's a very minor complaint because I see where they were going with the icons, and they're clearly defined in each of the icons, but for whatever reason, they don't stick in your mind. There's something that takes a little bit of processing to determine what the action is, and, you know, it's a very minor thing. It's easily rectified by having the last page of the manual next to you because it's got a complete guide to all the different icons, and I'm sure that over time you will memorize them, but For those initial couple of runs, it's just there's something just not quite intuitive about the iconography. And that's a minor gripe because it doesn't affect the gameplay at all. It just means that you have to process a bit more.
Yeah, the five actions actually are the two ones where you bet on who's going to launch the ship or moving that bet around. Though, because to me, the icon looks like barrels.
Yeah.
And the token, there's nothing about barrels in the actual gameplay element of that. Then the other one that I had problems, like, which one is this, is moving bits of the ships around, which is part of what you do for the game. There's three different ways that you do that, and just, I knew there were three different ways, but which one was which based off of the icons, there was a little bit of a processing error, so I would ask that question. I found myself asking that question about the first two, not so much the last one, fairly frequently. So this being my second game, I got it. Like, you know, I mean, it became clear by the end of the second game which one was which. It just, yeah, I could get that. Some of the icons aren't exactly intuitive.
Yeah, and again, it doesn't affect gameplay at all. It's just this level of detail. Sometimes you play a game and the iconography, it just lends itself well to intuitive gameplay. And for whatever reason, these did not, at least for me. You know, your mileage may vary.
Agreed. So let's talk about how the game is played.
Well, you start out by setting everything up, and you set everything up by looking down at the game board. And the game board is one long dock, and the dock is connected to the ocean. And in the ocean, you place ships. And these are ships that these are ships that consist of one tail end of the ship, three body segments of the ship, which are randomly assigned to different colors. Those colors represent the different players. And you have a line of these ships, each three long, and that is the initial setup of the game. You then put out a bunch of Viking markers, and the setup of these markers is going to be different depending on whether you have two, three, or four players. With two players, every player gets four of these Vikings. With three players, every one of these players gets three of these Vikings. And with four players, you only get two. And those Vikings represent your actions, which means that in a two-player game, you're going to get four actions per round. But in a four-player game, you're only going to get two actions per round. And that's a big gameplay difference.
Having played a two-player game and a three-player game now, it didn't seem as big. I think the four-player game would jar me a little bit more. Because only two actions it'd be harder to play around, especially if you are unlucky and you end up going last in the round.
Well, and that is kind of rectified a bit in the initial setup, because there are patterns for each of the player count numbers on how to set up the initial distribution of who goes when. And those patterns basically equalize the playing field so that everybody has a chance to go and grab an action or back-to-back actions, etc., to kind of even out where the players start.
Right. So the basic goal of the game is you want to get cargo on ships, and then you want to launch the ships with you in control of them so you can get the good stuff. And that's about it. And the way you decide who has control of the ships is there are 1, 2, 3 shields on each of the ship segments. A ship can have 1 to 5 of those segments when it launches. And whoever has the most wins. And if you control everything, then you get all the cargo, which is kind of fun. And if there's a pile of cargo and you are in control, you get to pick the first one, and then whoever second gets to pick the next one, and so on.
So there are a total of 11 actions. There are 10 actions that involve moving pieces of the ship back and forth and adding cargo and changing the value of that cargo. And then the final action, the 11th action, is taking the first player spot.
And this is one of the things I really liked about the game. The mechanic of who goes first is very, very, it's really simple, and it's just brilliant, which is to say, on one side of the dock, you have the little dock worker Viking. He's gray. He just switches sides every turn, and the turn order is based off of who picked what action the turn before. So the really, really strong actions that do a lot of really cool stuff, they are later down the track, and then the very, very first one is just, I want to go first next turn. And it's just brilliant.
Yeah,
it's so good.
Because it puts a cost at taking the powerful action. If you take the powerful action, that's fine. It just means that you're going to be one of the last people to go in the next round, and that could undo your strategy.
It could leave you with next to nothing to do.
Yes.
It's just really good. You know, if you're setting up a ship to leave, and you know you need that ship to leave, it means you want to go early the next time, because having a ship leave with cargo on it is an action. Then you know you need to put yourself in that first player spot, or at least far up in the line to try to block someone from doing that. It's a very elegant system to have, you know, who decides who goes first and then who goes first from turn to turn. And the end mechanic is one of the ships will never set sail, because there's 8 ships and only 7 of them will sail. So, yeah, but setting a ship off to sail is an action. And
so that means that you're only going to be able to score 1 ship per round.
Exactly. And so having that ship be the ship you want to score, that is a thing you need to like start setting yourself up for. So yeah, maybe you want to basically waste a turn by just saying, I'm going to go first next turn. That's all that guy is going to do. And I don't know. It's a brilliant little game. It's so intuitive. It's
tight. Tightly put together. There is relatively good balance that's inherent by the system of determining player order based on action strength. I mean, like with 2 players, with 3 players, and I've actually played this with 4 players as well, I can assure you that at every player count, everything balances out very nicely, and it tends to be nice, tight games where everybody has a shot.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like the perfect little Euro game. I mean, it just is, because to me, like, a Euro game is very rules light and very complex in strategy, and this nails that perfectly.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. That's a great way to summarize the gameplay aspect of this game.
So and there's a lot of high level thinking, because it was really funny. Like I was setting up a boat that I wanted to control and have set sail. And then you and my wife were trying to mess with me a little bit. And so I went relatively early, and both of you figured that I would just have that ship set sail. And what I noticed, and that was my plan too, until I noticed that there was a boat that had a lot of your high value pieces on it. Both you and my wife. And I'm like, you know what? If I set that ship off, that costs you pieces. and I can remove them from the game. And it was brilliant. I just did it. I'm like, yeah, that ship will go. And so, yeah, ship set sail with no cargo on it. And it was amazing. Yeah. And you guys were so mad at me. And then you decide to get back at me by, like really stacking that ship and moving a whole bunch of my pieces off. So they're like, well, if you're going to move this ship off, you're going to sacrifice a bunch of your pieces. And I'm like, okay, I'll play that game. I'll send another ship off with a bunch of your high value pieces on it. And so by the end of the game, the last like 2-3 ships that were left were all green, which was the color I was playing, and blue, which was the color of the player that was not playing at all. And all of your stuff had gone. It was just the last couple of rounds were, how do you make me lose less? Yeah. Or how do you make me win with lesser points? So maybe one of you can beat me that way. But it's just brilliant. Like, you know, the fact that you could set a ship off without anything on it just to, you know, sacrifice other people's pieces. And that's something you have to be aware of, because if you're trying to, you know, do that strategy of stacking up a ship with somebody with a single player's color to make them sacrifice a lot to have it set sail, you are opening yourself up to have them ship off a bunch of your pieces in response. And it's just glorious. It's a very good tactic in that game, and it's just brilliant. Like, yeah, it just, all the little nuances of that game are just brilliant. There's a lot of high level thinking that you can get into on that one.
Yeah, I continue to be impressed every time I play it by how A, much fun it is, B, how engaging it is, and C, how despite having played this game about 10 to 12 times now, every time I play, it gets a little bit deeper. There's another strategy to really kind of dig into that you can try and work. And like you said, on the surface, this is a very, very simple Euro, but that definitely is not what it's hiding. It's hiding an extremely detailed and strategic game that really rewards people that can think ahead.
Yeah, and I'll say this. I said this during the Scythe review. I have a really dumb way of how I learn how to play games where I have to like feel it out, and it sucks because it usually means like my first couple of games I'm going to lose until I like kind of get the rhythm of it. And this was another one of those games where, you know, I think by the second round I was like, bam, like I get this. Like all of the rules, like the actual gameplay element is that easy to understand, and it's just figuring out the higher level stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. It's a great little game. I love it.
Well, let's get some final thoughts here then, because I think we've kind of covered all the different aspects of the game. So final thoughts on Vikings on Board for you.
You know, if you're worried about a balanced game, it's balanced in that, you know, I mean, what action you take dictates where you get to go in the next turn. And there is inherent balance to that, because everybody has access to the same number of actions and everybody has access to trying to go first or doing whatever. So there's no real way to like unfairly move ahead, you know, like when I sent a bunch of your pieces off to sail, made you guys harder for you guys to win the game because you just had less to work with. Yeah. You know, that was kind of your own guys' fault. Like you opened that up and you didn't, you know, see that I saw that. And, you know, but it's a strategy and you know, it's just...
Neither of us was ever out.
Oh, no. And in fact, I didn't win by a whole heck of a lot, don't think. It's just brilliant in that regard. And that's the thing, too. There's a lot of games out there that say it's like, oh, this is completely a two-player game. You can play this with two people, and it's awesome. And it's, no, it is not awesome. Your game is lying. And there's a lot of board games like that. There's a ton. And this is one of them where, no, that is the truth. The two-player version to the three-player version, it felt very similar, you know. There, it wasn't like it was an entirely different game for two players. You know,
I mean, it's a very different dynamic.
It's a different dynamic, but the core game is still there. And yes. And having played a lot of two player games and then moving to the three player game, I don't think there's enough of a difference in the actual strategies involved that it's harder or easier or a different thing. It's just it's a different dynamic, but it isn't a different thing. And there's a lot of board games where the two-player version is very different than the multiplayer version. And this is, it's like Carcassonne or a couple of the rare other board games that when they say they're two players, they're actually not lying. And I love that. Like, I, you know, having a wife at home and kids, you don't always get to go out. And so having a game that plays well with two players and then you can take to your friend's house and plays well with multiple players is gold. It's awesome. And the fact that this game is balanced, it does that, and it's so easy to learn is amazing. It's the best. And the only thing I don't know about it, because I actually, you know, you taught me this game, so I didn't ever actually read the rule book. I mean, how is the rule book? That's the only question I have.
The rule book is supremely simple. I mean, the rule book is only six to eight pages long. And, you know, it's a very large font rule book, and there's lots of pictures. So, you know, to say that it's 6 to 8 pages long is to say that it's maybe 2 pages worth of instruction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very straightforward and simple. And I mean, you saw how easily I was able to teach it to you. Well, the rule book's just the same way. It's easily imparting the ideas onto you.
Awesome. So yeah, without having read the rule book, I would say it's a really good game. It's very easy to pick up. So, and yeah,
I'm going to go ahead and echo everything that you said, and I'm just going to add a couple things. And number one is, what's amazing to me is that this is a game that you can play with an 8-year-old, and this is a game that you can play with an 80-year-old, and everybody's going to have a good time playing it, and it's going to be easy for them to pick up and be effective at it. Additionally, it's such a looker. The box is beautiful. When you open it up, it's truly impressive. They've got great box control, which is something you don't see very often in board games, especially at this price point. And the fact that everything's pre-built for you and it looks so good on the table because everything looks beautiful. The level of detail on the boats is great. Everything being pre-built in 3D is great. They could have easily done this game even cheaper and made it 2 dimensions, but having those 3-dimensional boats just adds something to it, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Completely. Like, yeah, this totally could have been a flat token based game. Even for the same price point, and I don't think I would have questioned it.
No, I wouldn't have either. The fact that you get the 3D boats at this price point is nothing short of a miracle.
Yeah, it seems cheap for what you get. Like, it's not a cheap game, don't get me wrong, but it's like I would have expected this to be at a higher price point for what you get. The pre-built ships just blew my mind.
Yeah.
It
looks like a $60 game.
Oh, yeah.
I think when you combine how good-looking it is with the ease of gameplay and the depth of gameplay, I think what you have here is a really awesome package that everybody really deserves to have on their shelf.
Yeah, completely agreed. And you know, the running gag of the show is, you know, if you have a game, then I don't get it. I'm actually seriously considering getting this one because I mean, my 5-year-old's almost at the point I think she could probably pick this up. You know.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've started to. I'm actually sitting down this weekend to teach both my 7-year-old and my 9-year-old, and I have no doubt in my mind that they're going to be able to capture it just fine.
Oh yeah, no, your 7-year-old and your 9-year-old will be fine. You know, it's like the base core gameplay of it is simplistic enough that I'm thinking, like, I'm wondering if my 5-year-old could pick it up. You know, and that's because the base game is that easy, you know?
And there's no reading.
I just think she needs, I don't think her math.
All visual.
Yeah, I just don't think her math is quite there, you know? But like kindergarten, like basic math.
For the advanced stuff, yeah, you're right. The math isn't there. But I think, you know, I think she'll get the actions just fine.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and some of the strategy elements. And, you know, she'll make little kid mistakes. But yeah, I think the only thing holding her back is just kindergarten level math, which she will learn next year.
So there you go. That's our thoughts on Vikings on Board. It's published by Blue Orange. And honestly, I mean, you're going to be able to find it MSRP for $45 or even less online. So I would say that this is definitely a pickup for me. So there you go. Vikings on Board. Available from pretty much anywhere now. Well, that brings us to the end of yet another episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast. One more quick reminder to you, starting the next episode, we will be on the Freebooters Network. That is freebootersnetwork.com. We will be sending out another reminder before the next episode, just kind of, you know, on the RSS feed as one last chance for you guys to go do the right thing. But what you should do now is, if you're listening to us, stop what you're doing, pick up your phone, grab your computer, switch to whatever web browser you like. Go to freebootersnetwork.com and go ahead and subscribe to their feed. We will be on there starting with the next episode, which will, of course, will be episode 8. We'll be back with you in 3 to 4 weeks. And until then, party on.
I had final thoughts.
Oh, well, final thoughts.
I had final thoughts.
Had I've been thinking tense final have, thoughts. As in present tense.
I have final thoughts. I was waiting for you to throw it to me. Robert, do you have any final thoughts? I would have been like, yes, I have final thoughts.
Robert, do you have any final thoughts?
Yes, I have final thoughts. Although I think they're just echoing what you're just saying, but oh well. Yeah, just looking at the calendar, the next episode on the Freebooters Network should hit sometime on the week of the 19th through the 26th. We'll try to have a regular schedule, but we're on a new network, so it's insanity. We don't know what's going to happen. So
there'll be a little teething.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
an episode but, or two while we work out the new release schedule. But after that, we will be rock solid every 2 weeks.
Yes, word. And we'll know the day, because typically we post on Tuesdays. So we'll know the day. We'll get that all squared away. But regardless, we will release one or two or three or I don't know how many episode little mini things saying go over there if you want to keep listening to us. We talked about all of this cool stuff, and I'll give you a taste. Unless something extreme happens, the next one there will be some pirates involved and some more role playing. So there you go.
Indeed.
And so, hit nudge nudge. So
until then, party on, Robert.
Party on, Jonathan.
The music you heard in this podcast was Intro by Elefiel and Retro Funk by Persephone, both used with permission via the Creative Commons license.